Today's show is sponsored by our presenting sponsor, CuffLinks.com. Guess what's coming up? You know it. I know it. It's March Madness. I spent the weekend watching Duke games because my wife went to Duke. We love Duke in my household. Well, I should say my wife and my son love Duke. I'm kind of ambivalent, but I cheer for them because they love Duke. But it's coming up. The NCAA National Championships, March Madness, all that stuff. You got to go to cufflinks.com, use code NCAA30 and get 30% off all NCAA stuff. There's so much awesome stuff, whether it's ties, cufflinks, we got bags, socks, belts, all types of awesome stuff. And maybe I'll get some Duke stuff for my wife because I know she wants them to win. They got this guy Zion. He's pretty good. I like him. I watched the games. I'll admit it. I watched them. I'm coming around to college basketball, but you should come around to cufflinks.com/DVR and use code NCAA30 to get 30% off. Now on with the show. Welcome back to Podcast Winterfell. We've got a great show for you today. It's Game of Thrones rewatch season 3, baby. I'm just going to jump right into it. This is a simulcast on both Daily DVR and Podcast Winterfell. We're going to be getting a lot more of those as time moves on and we move into the season. I'm going to be doing some more interviews. I've got an interview coming up this Wednesday, or maybe it's Tuesday and Thursday. I've got both of them are going to pop up on Podcast Winterfell too. But remember, on Daily DVR on Wednesdays, I am going to try to get to do some news every week. And last week, I did 2 days of news and checking in on TV shows like Building Off the Grid. What other show talks about building off the grid, people? Okay? I love Building Off the Grid. You've got to watch it. If you don't watch it, watch it. It's awesome. I love it. All right. If you've listened to my first two rewatches, you know that I am having a tremendously enjoyable time here. I really am. And I can't tell you, as a podcaster, as what they call a content creator, I am not an influencer. Please, no, do not ever call me that. Somebody call me that. We don't talk anymore. I'm just a person doing a podcast, talking to some friends. And it is hard, though, because I rewatched the show. I may have not rewatched it every year if I wasn't doing a podcast. I don't know. I mean, I think I would have, but I don't know if I would have made such a concerted effort, right? And taken notes and talked about it into a microphone and then released it to the public. But I am doing that, and I do that. And I've been doing that since season one, we did 3 or 4 podcasts on 10 episodes. Actually, we did more than that on 10 episodes just on the film list. And if you look back on it, you can kind of piece together a good bit of that first season and then second season. And then Matt started Winterfell and then it just took off. So there is a question every year, you know, why am I doing this? Am I getting myself ready? Right? Am I, becoming familiar again with the material, because unlike other podcasts, and I give them credit, they're in this 24 hours a day, 365 million days a year. They live in the world of Westeros, right? And, or Eartharos or whatever it's called, right? Planetos. I don't. I talk about Westworld. I talk about Better Call Saul. We talk about the Oscars, even the Grammys. I talk about all types of stuff. And I always have. I haven't read all the books, though I have listened to a bunch of stuff. And actually I'm listening to the second book now, a bit of it. I know a lot about the lore. I've watched stuff. I've listened to podcasts. I do this podcast, but it's not a thing that I do every day, like say History of Westeros. Anytime I could ask them, like, who was the third uncle of the House of Umber or something? And they'd be like, oh, that was blah, 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 blah. I would be like, that's cool, but I don't know that. I like to talk about the TV show. So I really have been looking at this as a TV show and enjoying the TV show and also separating that knowledge that I have too. And also because I think I see the difference clearer than I did before. maybe this off season, I did actually spend more time listening and reading than I did watching the show. And I think maybe that has made the show better to me because I see it as it is, not as I want it to be or as others have told me it should be or shouldn't be. I see it as it is to me. And I'm finding a new appreciation for Rob, for Catelyn, for Sansa. I see that there are some characters that I'm not as drawn to as I thought I would be up to this point, like Tyrion, though I am enjoying him completely. There's really much more and better of him to come. Jaime, you know, I find that there's some characters I always appreciate that I appreciate even more, like Tywin, and just the great acting. I'm appreciating acting a lot more, and the I'm noticing things about makeup and clothes and just little details that are really how full this world was from jump. I was listening to a pod of Cast, Roberto and Abe. You should listen to that. Subscribe, a pod of Cast. And Roberto made the point that this world was like fully inhabited from the instant the camera opened, you know, for the instant we open on Winterfell. It exists that way. And they haven't changed it that much. It's not like a lot of shows where you look back at the pilot and you're like, oh man, look at that. They look totally different. And the whole, oh my, wow, look how the castle looks so different. And oh, that's when they started using this or that, you know. There are great differences, as he points out, and I will, as in like hair with Tyrion. And you know, there was problems with the pilot. We did a whole episode about it, the director's edition that we did where Mike and I talked all about the failed first pilot and all the differences in that pilot and the one that we eventually got to see, the different director cast. It was crazy. It was fun. But long story short, even with all those changes, I'm at season 3 and I'm realizing that, yeah, there are some changes in contrast, depth of field, really. Though that sounds strange to say. I mean, it's always has depth of field, but the use of it, just wide shot. There are filmic and photographic differences that separate, I think, season 1 from maybe the rest of the series. I do feel that season 1 was shot a little bit more like a kind of BBC historical drama, and from there and after, it was shot like Game of Thrones. It had developed, they came back in season 2 with such confidence that they almost by accident, and most of filmmaking is happy accidents, most of art is happy accidents, right? They created something wholly unto itself. And that's how I've come to see it now. After watching season 3, and looking back and seeing the differences and doing a little research into the cameras and what was different, what they used. Yeah, there were different companies, different slight variations in their workflow. But all in all, I think what it was a company coming together as a production unit and knowing what worked and having the confidence to go with some things more. It's just brilliant. I just have to start off by saying how brilliant this show is. And I know going into season 8, there's going to be haters and there's people listening to this who, when they compare it to the book, they're like, oh, come on, you know, whatever. Dan and Dave suck. What do they know? Blah, blah. Well, you know what? I respectfully disagree. This show is fucking awesome. And yes, it's going to change, and I'm going to talk about that as it goes on, and I'm going to be honest about it, but this is a great achievement, and it really is a fully inhabited world from jump. I see the time that they did put into building the world around the main characters, where they go, how they speak, how things are explained. Maybe it's a little expositional at times. But all in all, I have to say my overall impression after finishing season three, even with its kind of downer of an ending, you know, the lifting Danny up, right? Kind of like, and I mean, not a downer, but it was like, I remember when we were podcasting about it originally, I felt exactly the same way, which is first of all, that the Unsullied part was so much better. I was crying during that, and I'll talk about that more. But also, just the imagery in itself just didn't play right. And even when you look at the reactions of, like, Jorah Friendzone just standing there, and, you know, Dario 1.0, who is still my favorite Dario. I love that guy. The way he talked, his jaw, yeah, it's like, I'm sorry, like hearing mouth noises now. It's like he bit his words as he spoke them. He was like biting into his words as he spoke. And there's something kind of sexual and sensual about that. And Dario 2.0, who I love the guy, Treme, what a great actor, Michael Houseman, Haunting of Hill House, right? Netflix, love him. But never liked him as Dario. He doesn't have that same masculinity, you know, and that same almost, Dario 1.0 was almost like Mick Jagger-ish, but like masculine, because Mick Jagger is not masculine to me. I don't know, maybe to some people he is, but I don't find him to be very like tough or like, you know, like, but Dario, he was big guy and I don't know, I really liked him, but he went off to do the, oh, what was it? The movie with the car that originally Clive Owen starred in, the shorts that I think BMW made. Those were really good. The Driver, I think, didn't they? Or was it the follow up to a another like Jason Statham movie or something that they hired Dario to be in? But anyway, he left and we got Dario 2.0, which was probably better acting, but not the same oomph that I think Dario 1.0 had, even though I don't actually think he was as good an actor as Michael Houseman is, who's actually Dutch. And if you hear him speak, it's really interesting, but he's kind of like Charlie Hunnam, where you can always, like the accent, you can always tell there's something a little off, and it works for Game of Thrones. But I always thought it was a little, I think in Treme, they wrote it into it that he was Dutch. Anyway, I digress. Long story long, I love this season. I'm loving the show. There are things that obviously I'm not going to love, but there are things that I just was utterly impressed with. And so I'm going to start from the beginning, and I just basically took notes. So I'm going to run through those notes. When we start off, we're now in the thick of the War of the Five Kings here in season two. And one of the first things, I think it happens in episode two, that I picked up on, and that was continuing kind of my appreciation of Catelyn, is the speech where she speaks to Talissa about Jon Snow and about how, you know, she thought he was going to die, and she prayed to the gods, the old and the new, that if this boy survived, I would welcome him into my heart and my home. We would give him the name of Stark and all this stuff. And then she says, and then when it happened and he lived, she didn't do that. And everything since then, she said, everything since then has been kind of like a rebuke of her, right? Or her family. Which I didn't quite get, because that was like a long time ago before Ned got called to King's Landing and all this stuff happened. Or maybe the way she framed it is that this stuff is as a result of that. I found that to be so interesting, because one of the things that I forget when watching this show is there are people in this show like Tywin who care nothing about any of this stuff honor, and she, you know, somehow had to pay for this or that or anything. Like, speak that tone that they say they care nothing about it, right? Tywin's like, power is power, blah, blah, blah. But then when he speaks to Tyrion about, you know, how the honor of this family, I did this world, the rules of this world, like I was saying in my previous rewatch of season two, they've done such a great job of the motives of the characters are so intricately linked to the rules of this world. They're not, they don't come from our world. And the way that she would think that way, I mean, it is a little, you know, I mean, there's many religions you could say that growing up Catholic, I could say that they're, you know, that Irish Catholic say, you know, you always have to be paying for something, right? And there are these religions, whether it's the old or the new gods, right, do have, are in some ways based on our real world religions. But I like the way that she kind of explains this to her. And I think what she's saying is the way in which decisions that we make have long-lasting repercussions. And and there's so much of this foreshadowing of how this relationship is going to lead to the doom of so many people, which it will, but really it would have probably happened anyway. And that's something that I'm constantly reminded of in this show, that they try to tell us why things happened, but you really never can trust it. You know, they didn't lose the war just because Rob turned on Walter Frey. Frey was an asshole. He was a horrible human being. There was going to be some way. It was obvious that Roose Bolton, too, was always going to try to find a way to benefit from this. And once he could see that he could have Winterfell and the North, he was going to go for it. Who, you know? And Rob was never going to be the guy to give that to him or Frey, whether he married his daughter or not. The Red Wedding would have happened later. I just had such a more of an appreciation for how Catelyn and Rob, so much like Ned, were never going to win because they were never really going to be willing to play that type of game. And that's the game that has to be played, as we see who currently sits on the throne. So there's so much foreshadowing. Rob is told the war ended when you married her, right? That whole thing builds up so strongly through this season. It's so, when you're rewatching it, there is a doom over Rob and Catelyn and anything having to do with him for almost the entire season. You can just feel it. And it's palatable, you know, it's very palatable. Jaime loses his hand. Locke, unfortunately, my son's name is Lachlan, but he's nothing like this dude, cuts his hand off. Still, to me, the single most shocking event in all of Game of Thrones. Don't ask me why. Bran out the window. We're going to talk about the Red Wedding here. Dragons, whatever, Night, you know, Night King, still to me, the thing I had no idea, just out of no, and it was so quick. And then the way the next episode he's wearing it around his neck, ah, Jesus. It's really, I can't even. This is the beginning of Jaime and Brienne's relationship. And Jaime saves her from being raped by these guys. Later, she's, you know, thrown in the in a nice little arena with a bear, and he saves her there too. Their whole relationship through this whole season is fantastic. Lest I forget, what may be the single greatest monologue in the history of this show, which is Jamie in the hot tub talking about the Mad King and the connection to why he starts talking about it. And the reason is just because he feels close to her. There's no reason. When you go back and watch it, it's written very well. He just starts in on it. And it's like he just has to say it. He's at such a low point. I mean, you know, and the way that you get to feeling about Jamie after what he did to Bran, and just kind of the arrogant person he's been, killing his own cousin, it's amazing. This redemption tale, if you accept it as such, is just out there. And the ending, when he gets back to Cersei, is such a downer, such a buzzkill. you can tell that she's like, you know, you could tell there's something there. His journey this season is fantastic. The connection with he and Brienne is just amazing. This season is marked by the show really spreading its wings and spreading out, you know? There's chaos in the land, and we get to see that all over the place, all the way up to north of the wall and over to Dany, you know, and into Westeros. It's pairing up of people who it kind of, I guess in a way, this season is setting up a lot of pieces because we're leading up to the Red Wedding, right? And it is so palatable, the feeling and the hints that they play, the times when they play the Reigns of Castamere, the things that are the different speeches about guest rights that are given, especially Bran telling the story of it right before it happens, and which is amazing. And of course, we know that Arya later completes that story, which is amazing too. I was just struck by the massive amounts of foreshadowing in this season. That was like the theme of this season, what's to come. This really, more than anything, I felt like was the season of winter is coming. And I know we're going to get to season 4. I'll probably say the same thing, but it was just really amazing. I'm trying to figure out when Roz turned on Tyrion. Thoughts, ideas, notions, theories. DVRpodcast@gmail.com. Podcastwinterfell@gmail.com. Send it in. When did she turn on him? I thought maybe it was in the very beginning of this season. Then I'm like, no, maybe it's later when Varys is trying to get to her. Or was it when... No, I'm sorry, not Roz. I called her Roz. I mean Tyrion's girlfriend, who I'm forgetting the name of right now. I'm sorry. This is a stream of consciousness pod. I'm bound to forget someone's name and 5,000 people's names, but you know exactly who I'm talking about. Shay. When did Shay turn? Was it Roz, Tyrion, Varys, Littlefinger, Tywin? These are all the people who surround her at different times. We obviously know what ends up happening to Roz, and which is that she, you know what? That pissed me off. I have to say that was the first time in the show watching it through these seasons where that kind of echo of that, the discussion that we do have and we think about when we watch this show, which is the way that it has treated women, sex, violence, which is, we must think about that. And the Roz thing was just like to dump her off like that after so much investment in her character was dumb. If you separate it from the other aspects of that, just having her like, you know, Joffrey sent a few, just killed her like that. I just thought that was a waste. a real waste, because she had heard so much and she was so involved with everything. You know, it was, she had become an important character. And I mean, the way that she was brought in as Tyrion's woman, you know, and I know that's what eventually ends up, that's why she ends up getting killed. But I just felt that that was, there could have been more to the character, but I was disappointed. But we move on. When did Shay turn? I don't know. Who was it that turned her? I'm beginning to think that it wasn't so difficult. It was basically that she felt Tyrion had betrayed her and she was in love with him. So she had sex with his dad and she told him stuff. She turned on him. I don't know if there was more to it, or in the end she was sent by somebody, or I don't know. Maybe someone else has a different idea than I do. But I'm still interested and I'm still watching for it, and I will continue to. The Brotherhood. Yes. Love them. Love the Brotherhood. Beric, love him. I can't get enough of the Brotherhood. I think that it was one of the coolest parts of the show. And I so wish there was more of the Brotherhood. But what we get in this season is great. And the fight with the Hound. And Arya is... this season is all about Arya wanting to kill somebody. Like, she is just... the whole season is wanting to kill people. And in the end... she kills those guys who are making fun of her brother and her mom's death. Well, that one guy, and the Hound takes out three or more of them. But next time you're going to do that, tell me. And very dark, but not much of Arya this season, really. Not much of Stannis, not much of Arya. We get the whole Gendry plot with Stannis, but not much more than that. And I have to ask you a question. If they had burned Gendry, would Stannis have won? I don't know. What do you think? It's possible. Did the blood magic work? Or were all those plans going to happen anyway? That's the great question. Ah, that you got to give it up to the creator on that one. Grimster. Ooh. Shout it out. Jersey. All right, this is the mid-ad break, and I've got a special guest on the line. Say what's up, man.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is DJ Tim Hines, and I'm on with Axel right now. We're talking a little bit about March Madness.
All right, cufflinks.com, baby. Go to cufflinks.com/DVR. Use code NCAA30 to get 30% off NCAA merchandise. March Madness is upon us. DJ, who do you watch college basketball?
Oh, yeah, it's the time of the year where it gets the best.
Do you? But, I mean, are you like a big fan of college basketball?
Not until the tournament starts, and then all of a sudden I become the biggest fan just like everybody else with my brackets. And now this year I'm putting on cufflinks when I fill out my brackets.
Okay, that's awesome, man. So go to cufflinks.com/DVR, use code NCAA30, and get 30% off your order. I'm going to be rooting for Duke, because my wife loves Duke, and I like that guy Zion. I think he plays pretty tough. Actually, you know, he reminds me a little, he's a little like Oakley of the Knicks back in the day. He's tough. That's not like a Duke player. Duke's usually not, doesn't have like that tough player.
No, but you know what is also true? He's going to be number one draft pick. And yeah, you know what true. Is also number one? Cufflinks.com. So they got a lot in common.
That's Rupert true.
Root for cufflinks.com, root for DVR Podcast Network.
That's right.
Let's can't get go wrong.
Back to the show. The Brotherhood, though, I really love. And I just, first of all, I do just want to shout out the recasting here of Beric. And I think that that was a good job that they did that. Because when you look back at the dude, maybe he was a great actor. He didn't have much to say. He was in like a couple scenes, and then I think he only had like a little bit, one speaking line when they sent him out to find the mountain, right? Well, when Ned did. And But they did a good job because these guys work so great together. Thoros, great actors. The whole story about the Lord of Light coming to him, and just the way that the Hound just chops him like in half and he just sits back up. You know, we're in full magic territory here. And they don't, I love the way Game of Thrones does it too. He gets killed like that. His, basically his arm, half of his, like he cuts him right at the shoulder. Oh God, I just not touching my own shoulder blade. It hurts thinking about it. And then they just cut back to the Hound. They're talking. The next thing you know, he sits up. He's just there talking. They don't play like, it's not like dum dum dum, you know, and everyone's like, oh, they're just like, hey, and he keeps on talking and the Hound's like, what the? And then they go, they cut. That's it. I like that's, that is good stuff. That is smart. You know, I like the way they just went with it. And again, I can't say how much, I do wish that they would do, you know what, HBO, give me a Brotherhood, give me give me 3 hour long episodes of the Brotherhood before this time, how it came together. I'll watch it. Give me 6 episodes. I'll watch it. All right. So much trauma. I was thinking about that this season, speaking about Beric getting cut in half by the Hound. You just notice the hurt and the pain and the sadness and the loneliness and the death and violation, sexual, mental, physical, I mean, just of routine, of food, the starvation. This is really a rough world. And we have fun with the dragons and we talk of this show, but sometimes it's good to look at it and go, this is some dark shit. This is really some dark shit. And these people have endured trauma. And a lot of them are children. And it's hard to watch. I, again, with my connection here to Arya, to Sansa especially, look at Gendry. He's just a boy. When he explains, what was I to do? The Red Woman came to me. The only woman I've ever really spoken to or that spoke to me. She took me into her bed. What was I to do? I was like, that's great writing right there. And it he's speaking, that comes in the last episode. And when he's speaking to Davos in the prison cell at the bottom, just in Dragonstone, before he is freed and told to row, row, row his boat, he's not rowing anymore. And he should be king, right? I have another comment about how many people should be king and how silly it becomes in the end and how it goes to show you that it doesn't really matter and the whole ideas of ascension and blah, blah, blah were bullshit anyway. But we all knew that. But the trauma... Just a kid. So it's Sansa. I mean, I don't think Sansa says for like a season and a half, Sansa doesn't really speak her mind at all. At all. And it's heartbreaking. It's rough stuff. And I love this show, and it's a lot of fun. But there's no doubt that there's a darkness here. And hopefully... what we get in the end is some light. But it's also very funny. This show is so funny, and I'm noticing that too. Certain characters, I talked about this in season 2, how I thought that Blackwater was one of the funniest episodes of Game of Thrones ever, because it is. And this season is full of some just comedy gold too. Jamie is particularly funny, some of his sarcastic stuff. I don't know. Hot Pie. Hey, do we all forget what a little jerk-off Hot Pie was? Why does everybody like Hot Pie? Hot Pie was like kind of a prick until he started baking. Can we admit that now? You know, do we remember how he first like run up onto Arya, got all up in her face? boy, you know, and Gendry had to step in. And Hot Pie's like, oh, Hot Pie, oh, you know, oh, whatever. I'm telling you, Hot Pie would be like that dude that you'd be like, yeah, he's my friend. Eh, I don't really like him that much. I'm not down with Hot Pie, whatever. We'll see. Maybe as time goes on, I'll get more. And anyway, his pie wasn't that good and even looked like a, look like anything, look like a wolf. Yeah, the kids and the trauma is tough, but the funny stuff is there too. Okay. Marjorie, amazing. Amazing this season. The way that she manipulates Joffrey, just takes over, is strong, wants to be queen, stands up to Cersei. Cersei has that little threaten to her in the keep. Like she says, you know, like, say that again and I'll string you up or something. And Marjorie's like, whatever. Walk on, old lady. I love that. I think Marjorie's amazing. And I really wish we could have seen her demise and not just heard about it, because I loved Marjorie. Great acting. And she tones Joffrey down. She really, I mean, he's still, you see that happening in this season too, which is that there's many conversations that Cersei has, that Tywin has, that Tyrion has, about how Joffrey is crazy. And he is an animal, and they're all ashamed of him. But they kind of don't know what to do. There's like five or six conversations. Cersei and Tyrion, as a matter of fact, have two distinct conversations that are only about how bad Joffrey is. And Cersei goes into saying, he was such a beautiful little boy. Who would know? Who would know? You know, and she's like upset about it. Their relationship is so strange. It's such magnificent acting, the way that they, like brothers and sisters do, they're sometimes so intimate and close, and then other times they just hate each other, you know? And I mean, she ends up killing Roz because she thinks she's hurting Tyrion. But Joffrey is tamed this season. He really is. He's tamed. And that's kind of a sight to see. Not that he still does crazy shit, okay? I'm not saying that. But he's tamed a lot more than last season. And Marjorie and the Queen of Thorns. I can't believe I haven't mentioned her yet, who is like introduced in this season. Just absolutely amazing. And their scenes with Sansa, that when Sansa finally speaks her mind, and she says, he's horrible. He's a monster. Great stuff. Girl, speak your mind. I love her. What? And then all the way to the end, she was wonderful. One of the great characters on this show is the Queen of Thorns. And the way that her and Marjorie sit there and kind of... Marjorie, in many ways, Sansa learns from Marjorie. As you see, in the way that she attempts, unsuccessfully, to lull Ramsay later. And that we know what happens there. But even the way she survives that, not just survives, but thrives and comes to see her, you know, like a power in living through that and just being herself... I think Marjorie was in a way an inspiration to Sansa and the Queen of Thorns as well. And it was good for her to have those people around her, not Cersei. Let's talk about Bran's journey. Bran, Jojen, this whole thing is like 30 minutes, maybe 40. Of the season. And I love all of it. And I want a 6-episode prequel of how Jojen and Mira got there, just because they just appear. And that's one of the amazing things about this is the way they use their appearance, the way it's shot initially, their entrance and in their introduction to mirror Bran's dreams and mirror what we will, I believe, come to see, which is this all some kind of loop and Bran has something to do with it, right? it's amazing because when they appear, you don't really know that they're really there or who are these people. And then they explain who they are and their Hal and Reed's connection to Ned. And later on, we'll see that at the Tower of Joy. But it's like a dream. And then so much of this season is Bran learning to warg. And then when they run into Jon, and when he goes into Hodor, and it's great stuff. I really loved it. I wish there was more of this. I wish they had done maybe a little bit less of Dany once she got the Unsullied, even though I like Dario 1.0. And concentrated more on Bran because every time he came on, I was like, oh, I'm watching intently. You can't see me because this is a podcast, but I'm watching intently. I loved it. I loved all of it. And I'm excited, of course, to see more of it because I know it only gets better. And just the way Jojen is just so confident in who he is, I want to know more about him and I'm not going to know. How did he know about his powers? What's his story? Why is he special? What's the connection? Maybe we'll see more of him. I hope he comes back. I loved that character. And I feel like I'm not going to learn that much more, you know, because I really won't. But great stuff. Great stuff with Bran. And Bran's the key. And, you know, I do, as being a science fiction fan, not a huge fantasy fan, my roots are sci-fi. And in sci-fi, I call it the Robotech ending, because that, for me, they did it the best. Where the end is the beginning, and the beginning is the end, but they're both the middle. And everything is and will be and has been before and will be again. I like that kind of deal. And Matrix tried to do it. We understand how the Matrix ended. It's just unsatisfying. But I think that Game of Thrones can do this in a satisfying way. And I don't think it'll be so much that as this is the end of the loop. This is maybe the start of a new loop in some way. Or maybe I'm totally wrong. But you don't introduce time travel and someone interceding twice in time. Ned heard him at the Tower of Joy and Hodor, and not have that play into the end game. Sorry, folks, that's going to be part of the end game. And if it's not, and it's just a big battle, Billy is going to take his toys and go bye bye. No, I'm just kidding. I won't, but I'll be a little like, what? Come on. You know, no. Now Shireen. Oh, this is a nice little story with her and Davos. And I guess this is like an important part of the Stannis thing. I liked Shireen. It's cute. And it's creepy that they kept her up there in that tower there. You don't really see Stannis' wife this season. I think she's in one scene. One scene, maybe. I forgot how much Rob and Talissa there is this season. There's like three or four scenes where they're just making out and doing sex and loving and talking and joking, you know, plotting, and you know how that's going to end. And unfortunately, I have to say, I couldn't think of anything but the Red Wedding while I was watching it. So though I was successful in other parts, not thinking ahead, I must admit in their scenes I was not. But it did, oh God, when it did happen, it brought it home. And I'm getting there. Let's see. Arya, I talked about the Brotherhood, Thoros. Oh, Qyburn. I forgot that Qyburn was in the ashes of Winterfell, right? He was found by the Boltons, I think, brought to Harrenhal, right? And then he meets up with Jaime, and then he's going to make his way, I think, because of Jaime, eventually to King's Landing, right? It's just interesting. Sometimes you forget It's like when I realized how much Roz was in the show. There's some people that you just, there's so many characters. I just never realized how much Qyburn had been in this. And also, he has a fantastic conversation with Jamie about the dead and how he studies that. And then we know what he eventually does with the mountain. And it just got my theory bug itching. And I was like, could Qyburn help them defeat the whites? Can he concoct some kind of magic that eliminates the White Walker's ability to make whites? Like, if he could make everybody drink something when they were alive, that doesn't harm them. But when they die, it will prevent them from being resurrected, you know, instead of just burning. Like, you could, in a sense, inoculate the population against the White Walkers. Then they could not grow their army. Just a thought. Just a thought. Could Qyburn, in the end, help? Right? Because his story is one of being ostracized for the dark arts. And look at, my God, all of the people in power got there because of that. So it's obvious that, in a sense, poor Qyburn should have been thriving in this world, but because of the power that he probably possesses, or the insanity, he has not, right? Because they are, this is now, it was a world, it's not now, it was a world where that stuff was not good, and it was, and magic was pushed down. But now, of course, with, you see Danny and the Brotherhood, everything, it's coming up, 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 you know? Okay. Ygritte. I forgot how much I loved her. She just takes the piss out of Jon Snow, and I love it, and it's just so much fun, and their relationship, and he really comes alive this season, doesn't he? He was such an emo, slogging along, like, kind of just testosterone-filled. He's kind of a bro in a way, you know? He was a little bit of a privileged, not a little bit, he was like a privileged kid. Of course, he ends up in the Night's Watch, we know that, but I don't know. I had an unfavorable opinion of Jon Snow over the first two seasons, but Ygritte makes him grow as a man. See? Sex is good, people. Just like George Michael said, sex is natural, sex is good. Not everybody does it, but everybody should. And Jon Snow got some, and Ygritte was like, get over yourself, fool, you know, and just spoke truth to him. And what an amazing character and actress, and I love her. Never really considered how the wildlings crossing the wall, and wow, that was awesome, was a foreshadowing of the White Walkers, but also a ruse in the way, because they're not escaping. I mean, they're not conquering, they're escaping, right? And what was the deal with, they keep on mentioning that 6 times in 1,000 years you've crossed, and all our men have beat you, you know? Have the White Walkers tried to come before, and that has been hidden from the histories? Is that, like, when they say the wildlings came 6 times, were they escaping 6 times? And I'm just always obsessed with why the White Walkers are coming now. Why is winter is coming? Was it because it wasn't because of what happened at Craster's, the revolt there and killing of Craster and basically the drying up of their baby factory. Which, by the way, are the Night Watch still there? Do they go back there? I don't remember. Be interesting if, like, they go back and they had made a new deal with the White Walkers. I don't know. 99 children he had. Little Sam is the 100th. I always think Little Sam is important. And what is up with all that stuff there? You know? I mean, what's going to eventually happen with the idea of why the White Walkers are coming? Was it Craster? Was it encroachment by the wildlings? Was it because Mance Rayder joined them together? No, because he was joining them together because of the White Walkers. So the people shouldn't have been there anyway. I mean, if we go back to kind of history and lore stuff, you know, the agreement was that man would not cross the wall either. And they did, right? So man was breaking the rule there. I guess we'll find out hopefully this season, but I just wanted to bring that up. Let's see. Ooh, sorry, hit my mic. All right, let's get into it. The Red Wedding. Wow. I did a tweet about this. I talked about this on the last pod. I was getting to the point where I was saying to myself, wow, Rob, Catelyn, they did their best. What were they supposed to do? Thrown into this. Catelyn didn't even want Ned to go to King's Landing, homie, let alone getting into a war. And all of a sudden her son is King of the North, a guy who was playing archery with his little brother a couple weeks before that. Maybe a couple of years, maybe a couple of months, but that's this world, right? Ned too was thrown into that. Robert too was thrown into that. They all have, this is the way that world seems to work, right? It's like, the Pixies, quiet, loud, quiet, loud. And, I just had empathy for him. And then I clicked over and it was the next episode, which was the Reigns of Castamere. And it all makes sense. I mean, how could they not know? I mean, you trusted Roose Bolton. You trusted Walter Frey. I mean, the way Walter Frey greets Talissa and Rob and talks about, I can see what's under that dress. I'm a good... It's disgusting. You know, he's nasty. He reminds me of a person that we all hear too much about in this day and age. And it's just... What did they think? But they had no choice, and they had this plan, and they needed the route, and they needed the men, and they needed to get and try to take out Tywin. Like, in a sense, though, he was just trying to do what had been done to him, where Theon had taken out Winterfell. You know, I know it wasn't for Tywin, but it was like he kind of took that idea, and it didn't work out. You know, I had thought that Rob was arrogant. And I kind of had agreed with Tywin, but I don't think so. I think he had to do what he had to do. And Catelyn too. She was not a warrior. She was not. For 17 years, they had been hanging out at Winterfell away from everybody. You know, they were in the North. They didn't deal with any of this stuff. You know, they didn't even plan to. They didn't even want the king coming to Winterfell, let alone having to go move to King's Landing. So, you know, to see what happens here and the way that they take out the baby first and Rob just stands there getting, and it's the band that they keep on cutting to. And I kind of feel like, wasn't that some band, like real band? I can't remember. But it was just, oh, it was, I mean, I don't even know what to say because it's just emotion is what it is. It's heartbreaking and it's violent and it's shocking and it's disturbing and it's sick and it's gross and it's makes you sad. And I counted Michelle Fairley, Catelyn Stark stands there for 15 full seconds. Like that for 15 seconds before one of Frey or Bolton's men comes up behind her and slits her throat. And then there's another, then she just drops. You know, it's like he slits her throat. It's like one, two, she drops. They cut to black, no music. Oh, just absolutely. There's nothing that could, I said this to my wife, shout out to my wife. I love her. It was our 10th anniversary last week. We had a great wedding and, jazz music, baby, mini hot dogs. Those are the two things I got. I got one more thing, who married us. That's for another podcast. But what a great wedding we had and 10 years of bliss. Let's talk about that during the Red Wedding. There's nothing that compares to this in Game of Thrones. This is like a dopamine hit that can never be replaced. Never. Because for those that didn't know it was coming, it's like Jamie's hand. It came out of nowhere. It's brutal. It's disgusting. I mean, this is a violent show. And I want to see as it goes on, I think it's become less visceral. And other people have said that too. But this season is so full of bodily fluids. And when they cut the neck, just you can see it tear up the skin, pull back, like what really happens when you cut skin so quickly and just open. It's just great effects. The way the Red Wedding is shot, there's no whip pans, okay? There's no, you know, quick shots. There's no fancy stuff. It's straight shots, right? And everything is from the floor. All the shots are from the perspective. It's hard to explain, but not point of view, but of the general area of where you would be if you were Catelyn or Rob. When you're looking at Walter Frey, when you're looking at the people shooting, it's really, it's so simple. And just holding that shot, that 15 seconds of her just moaning over the loss of her son and grandchild and life and war and husband and never seeing, she had just had a scene with Rob where she said she would never see her daughters or sons again. You know, at that point they thought that, Bran and Rickon were dead, right? I believe, just absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible. Or maybe they didn't know. Maybe Roos had told them that they were alive. But either way, I know she said never see them again. It's just absolutely heartbreaking and beautifully shot because of its simplicity. It was long takes. It was a lot of center framing. It was a lot of wide shots so you could see the space of the hall that they were in and get the feeling of claustrophobia. You see them shut the doors, Catelyn's face. She looks, there's a lot of glances and looks. But they're not quick, right? And that's important because so much of today's editing is quick, 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 MTV bullshit. They do a shot. She pulls up Roose's shirt to see the chainmail underneath, and she knows what that means. But she already knew. She kind of notices early on. Rob doesn't notice until it's happening, until it's already happened, until he's got an arrow in him. And Walder Frey and Roose are two scumbags, and they should have. I don't know if Ned would have ever made the deal with them. Maybe he would have. Maybe he would have been fooled too. I don't know. I don't know what their reps were. But they shouldn't have been good. So, all right. A great season. I do want to mention this at the end to see where we kind of end everyone. I'll kind of go around where we end. Arya, she's on her journey with the Hound after the Red Wedding. We're going to get great stuff there. Jon has returned back to the Night's Watch. And what a shot when he gets there after Ygritte put three arrows in him. Excuse me, Ygritte, you could have killed him. Wasn't one enough? You made your point. You know you didn't want to kill him, but look at the times. One arrow can give you gangrene, make you give you have an infection, and you're dead. Gosh. But same shot. John is on the ground, people looking down, then him looking up as when he is killed in what, two or three seasons? And it's the same shot when he returns back there and Sam and all the guys greet him, Pip and Merry. And it's very foreshadowed in the cinematography there. Go back and look at it. It's the same exact shot. Both shots are the same exact shot. And I thought that was great. That was wonderful because he gets back there, right? And then next time he's going to leave is when that happens. Really leave, I mean. Because remember, he had left the Night's Watch. He had taken up with the Wildlings. Now his watch will end with that same shot. Again, I love Egret. Love her. A fellow ginger, ginger power. If you're a ginger and you're listening to this, ginger power. Us redheads. We're a dying breed. A dying breed we are. Again, the ending of everything with Dany was kind of cheesy, but her journey was interesting. After the Unsullied stuff, it kind of, it wasn't that the second city did we need it. Again, I just want to say, instead of just complaining about it, I'll give an alternative, which is I would have liked to find out more about the Targaryen history and the dragons. That would have been fun. But I see where we're going with her and the Unsullied. Oh, man. The scene when the Unsullied are freed, when they decide to go with her, when they talk about how they have to kill the babies, when what has been done to them, and how we can feel such power in the freeing of these slaves and how they kill the masters. Man, I was crying. That makes me cry every time. It gives me goosebumps all over. And I just, when I think about that, it's such a powerful story, and that was told so well. And once again, so much of it just inside that little outside kind of amphitheater type area, room, whatever it was. So much of this season for Dany is really not, she doesn't really do that much, but it's some great scenes there in the beginning. And I, like I said, I liked Dario, but again, I would like to see something a little bit different from Dany. I admit it. Of course, we know Rob and Catelyn are dead. Jaime's return to King's Landing. And this is what, one of first of two or three returns he'll do, right? And every time Cersei's like, not really that impressed. Yeah, bro, you really like me a lot more than I like you. We had the wedding of Tyrion and Sansa. We're going to get the wedding of Joffrey coming up. This, we're going into a new time. Tywin is firmly in control. The War of the Five Kings is over. Stannis is trying to make some move here, but it's not going to happen because they lost Gendry. There's no other, there's no other usurpers, right, that need to be taken out at this point that I can remember. They've all been taken out. And we're going to get into what happens here, and we're going to get into this winter coming more so. We've got journeys that we're going to see, and it's kind of, we're at a point in which, again, like after the Battle of Blackwater and coming into season three, where the pieces reset and we start a new journey, though it's the same, and we see what stays, right? What's consistent, what's the constant, and the constant is that winter is coming. And I am very excited to get into season four. I hope you've enjoyed this podcast today. I think I went through all my notes. I ended up by saying a great season. Let's see, did I miss anything? Give me a second here, Liz, to look. Egret, Qyburn, Brotherhood, yeah, Arya, Rob, very little Stannis again. Yeah, the show's spreading its wings. Yeah, I did everything. Well, all right, everybody. If you're listening to this on Daily DVR, I'll be back on Wednesday with a special episode, and we're going to have a couple more episodes of Winterfell this week. Subscribe to both. If you like Daily, if it's the same one, erase it. And then you get some of the extra Daily DVR stuff if you're into film and TV. But for Winterfell, I'm going to start to announce the schedule too. And it's locked, baby. And it's awesome. We're going to be bringing so much great stuff to you this season. Shout out again to our sponsor, Cufflinks.com. Always the best. Matt gave me an episode, a preview of season 8. Yeah, baby. Clef Notes is back We love it. Thank you, Matt. I'm going to drop, he said he was going to drop his on Wednesday, and I want people to go over there and subscribe to Matt's podcast. So we'll drop it after Matt drops his. And then people can listen to it on here too, because season 8's, we got time to come for that. But that's going to be great, and I appreciate that. And we're going to have a lot of old friends and new friends on the podcast this season. Thank you so much for listening. DVRpodcast.com, DVRpodcast@gmail.com. That's it. Love you all. Hope you're doing well. I do have to say, I watch this show, and it is dark, and it's sad. And, you know, you look at events in the world and recent events, and it does make you a little sad, but the thing that makes me great is that we have to share it with each other, right? We created this place together, and it's a place of thought and ideas and sharing and love. So, peace out.